This is RSVB Update, episode 434, recorded Friday, October 11, 2013. The Lumberjack is not okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSVB Update. Thank you for joining us once again on this episode in the middle of October when it's starting to get nice and crisp out around here and change seasons in other places of the world as well. You're back this week?
Yes, it's me, J1, J2, J3!
Such an easy name to type, but we often just call him Trekkie. Anyways... So you're back this week, and we got a bit of a minor RS update to talk about, depending on however you look at it. This week's update pertains to the woodcutting skill. And as you guys know, woodcutting is one of the skills that people often start training when they first land on the lands of Gilinor, because there's trees all over, and you get a bronze hatchet right away. So it makes sense that there's an update for this beyond, level 77, I think, for the sawmill and eucalyptus trees, if I remember correctly. So
yeah, around that.
Let's go.
Okay.
So this week, we got two new trees, elder and crystal trees.
Crystals.
Yeah, not crystal meth, apparently. I made some inadvertent reference last week to crystal meth on the show.
Huh. Oh, that's why Reed was laughing his behind off.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, so these high-level trees, they're very interesting.
Okay. So they're all level, you need level 90 woodcutting to cut these trees, and they offer good woodcutting experience and cut their logs, great use for fletchers and fire makers who are level 90 up. So fletchers up of level 90 can create an elder shield bow or the short bows, and they're considered a level 60 range weapons.
Yeah, and that was the interesting thing about this update. This pushed the dark bow up to a level 70 ranged weapon. So there's actually a somewhat decent bow now at level 70 that doesn't deal with barrows or any kind of God War stuff.
Maybe I'll dust them off my dark bow and have some fun with it.
Yeah, and they also drop dark arrows, the dark beasts. You can get the arrowheads and then fletch them with 95 fletching.
So where are the trees located anyway?
Well, basically... if you guys didn't watch the RSVB update supplemental this week on this update, the elder trees are located in a series of locations around the world. Some of them are easy to access, and some of them make more sense than the others to use. The core thing to remember when looking for elder trees is that they disappear and they take a long time to recharge. So the elder trees are not what you want to use for experience. So just keep that in mind. The elder trees are available south of Falador at the Piscatoris fishing colony, just south of there in that hunting area by the summoning obelisk. You can also find them south, or rather north of the Legends Guild, right where that divination spot is for 30 divination, I think. So there's one there. There's also one between Edgeville and Barbarian Village, kind of by that yew tree and the portal to Soulwarts.
Mm-hmm.
There's also one in the Elvenlands, which is right next to the magic trees in the Elvenlands. So if you're chopping magic logs, you could pick up some elder logs there as well. So if you're, for example, making runs back and forth to the Liledia Bank... this would be a good place to do that. Also, there's one that's south of Yunil, which is located right next to a crystal tree, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And there's also one in the Gnome Stronghold. And south of Falador and south of the Drainer Bank. So they're spread out across the world. There's various places where you would use certain ones. Like I said, if you're chopping magic trees, use the one in the Elven Lands. If you're chopping ivy as your main source of woodcutting at level 90, you'll want to chop the one south of Falador. And if you're hunting crystal trees, and the crystal tree happens to be by Yanil, stock up on some elder logs there as well.
Hmm. So, okay, so they recharge. How long is the recharge?
I didn't get a chance to time how long the actual recharge rate is, but let's just say that it's long enough that you don't want to be standing around waiting for it. You want to be doing something else in the meantime.
So basically it's like a woodcutting version of farming where you kind of plant your thing and go do something else. So here is like you cut the elder wood, elder's log, and you go do other woodcutting activities until it comes back up.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's why I say if you're level 90 and you're training with Ivy, your best course of action would be to use the one that's south of Falador, because that's right there.
Okay.
But the main purpose of the Elder Trees, I think, is not experience, because they give something like, I think it was 325 woodcutting experience, which is good, but it's just so infrequent that it doesn't make sense to use them as a main source of XP. So these are more to be used for the bows, the shield bow and the short bow, for the ranged weapons. So that's what these are to be used for, in my opinion.
I kind of feel it's a little, the requirement for this so low compared to the fact that you need level 90 in order to make it.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like what it does before, right? Like, for example, the Yu short bow is at level 70 fletching, but you only need, what, 30 to use it? Or no, 40? So, I mean, it's the same kind of distance between levels. It makes sense, but it's just going to be for leveling up. It'll be interesting to see once the price stabilizes on these what the profit is for fletching. Because just recently, in the last 6 months, fletching became profitable again with the high alchemy skill, which hasn't been doable since 2006. So, I mean, if you can make money with fletching and train it, potentially a good reason to get that as a first 99 again. But, and let's just be clear, you're not going to burn these for fire making. Earlier in the week, they were going for 3,500 each. And when they came out, they were going for more, 10k a log. So, I mean, these aren't logs that you want to throw away. You want to turn them into something tangible.
Okay, so let's see. So have you tried the dark bow and dark arrows yet?
No, I haven't. You know, I'm not much of a ranged person. I always prefer magic, so I didn't get to do that. But overall, it's a happy change because, like I said, there's been lots of things that we're missing at level 70. We have the Armadale crossbow, but I'm struggling to think of what we had before for a two-handed bow that you could use at that crystal level. Bow. Well, yeah, the crystal bow.
Crystal bow is a little bit lower.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It's good. It's a good change, and for something that requires level 90 Slayer to get, doesn't it make sense it should be a bit higher than 60?
I think they're trying to fill some for the happy medium.
Yeah, and that's what we said a year ago when Evolution Combat was coming out. These things need to be filled up. So.
Okay.
Overall, I'm happy with this. And the fletching experience is 101.2, which is a bit of an odd number for the short bow, and 116.4 for the shield bow. Then, of course, you get the same XP when you decide to string it. So just comparing that to, for example, the magic short bow or magic shield bow, the magic shield bow gives you fletching XP of about 183. So, I mean, I don't get why this is lower, but it's kind of weird that that's the case.
Well, actually, I'm a little interested in trying out the dark bow with the new dark arrows. I want to try some monsters that are supposedly weak against.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. That's the full bow. 91.5 is the magic shield bow. So there you go. Of course, you get more XP for doing this. I'm silly. I had my XP listed wrong. So it's good. All right.
Okay, that's good.
So let's move on to the crystal trees.
Okay, crystal trees. So, let's see. Crystal trees are all about training woodcutting skill. Much like IV, they yield no resource but offer an excellent woodcutting rate.
Exactly. And that's what these trees are all about. In some tests that we did, I did a test, Mike did a test, we got XP in a pretty large range. I guess I was just less focused when I did mine, but I got around 82,000 hour experience. But when he did his... Go ahead.
Oh, I was wondering, I remember you telling us that you got a dragon stone from...
Yes, we'll get to that in just a minute. But the experience can... it's very good, even at level 94, like 100,000 experience per hour, dragon hatchet, lumberjack gear. So it's definitely possible just with a dragon hatchet to get 90,000 plus an hour if you're on the ball with this. So it's a very good way of training woodcutting past 94.
So did Mike have full lumberjack outfit?
Yes, he did. I did not.
Was he okay?
Yep. Oh, I see what you did there. Right.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So they're only located in the elven area?
Well, no, that's the thing. They're crystal, but they're located elsewhere. The trees are interesting because they move around every 2 hours. So you need to find out where exactly the tree is. So once you find out, it stays put for 2 hours. And do you want me to tell you where they are?
Do they replace a possible elder tree or something, or no?
No, they're just on their own. It's a totally different mechanic. So, they're located south of the Witch's House, to the west of Palador. That's one of them. Also, south of the Sears Village Courthouse. Also, one just south of Yanil, by that elder tree that I mentioned earlier. We also got one on Karemja near Brimhaven. Also, a very, very oddly placed one up by the lighthouse in the Fremenic province. So, kind of strange that there's one all the way up there. The best way to get to that one is either your games necklace or a Fremenic house portal tablet. We also got one by the observatory as well. And finally, in Gnome Stronghold. So they're located throughout the world, same way that the elder trees are. But in order to find one, every 2 hours you need to look at the tree and look at which way it's pointing. You can do this by using the click option, look at tree, and it'll say the tree points slightly to the west. So this means that based on where you are, the tree is going to be to the west. So, for example, I was at the one that was south of the courthouse, and it said it points to the west. That means that it's in Gnome Stronghold. So you got to do this once every 2 hours and find them. And chances are, by the time you're listening to this, there will either be a friends chat where you can get where it is, or there will be a website or forum topic that has it updated. And then once you find these, it's just like ivy cutting. You don't get any main resources for it, just the experience.
But you also have a chance of getting some good stuff. Sit there
and chop. Yes. Yes. The crystal geode, which is like a bird's nest, except it has crystally type things. It can have gems in it, triskelion pieces, and maybe even a crystal seed. Those things that you can use to turn them into crystal saws or crystal bows, that sort of thing. And, you know, it just turned out that when I was doing my test, I got one of these geodes, and I got a dragonstone. So, I think it's a good way to earn a bit of money on the side with doing this, and who knows what you could accomplish all the way from levels 94 to 99. So, definitely worth looking into if you're in that range of woodcutting. Very good experience.
Sadly, I'm only 91.
Well, see, and then this is the perfect situation for you, because as I said, you have 91 woodcutting, so you can chop the elder trees. So what you would do is you would go to south of Falador, chop the ivy wall there, and then whenever the elder tree's branches appears, all you would do is you go and chop those branches on the elder tree every couple times until you get a full inventory. Then you can bank that and make some money along the way while doing your ivy. So, see, that's the perfect kind of synergy looking at that for you.
Cool.
Yeah, so that pretty much covers the trees this week, I think. Not really much else to mention. Do you have any questions pertaining to it?
How does it look? Does it look all shiny and crystally, or is it just pixels?
Well, it looks like elven crystal. No, you cannot, unfortunately. there's no reflection. They just basically look like predefined crystals. They're not transparent. They're very blue. Anybody who wants to see what they look like, just have a look at the supplemental video from this week on YouTube/RSBNBstaff.
Okay.
All right. So, should we move on to the bonus XP tidy up?
Oh, this was a nice little update for
Oh,
me.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Me too. Me too. I cleared like, how many inventory spaces was it? I think I cleared at least 25 inventory spaces from my bank by getting rid of all my pendants.
Really? I actually use mine quite often, actually.
Yeah, I mean, these things were just stacking up. So, basically what happened is that, you know how you got experience when you did the Duke's Dilemma during the Battle of Lumbridge?
Mm-hmm.
That's how these bonus XP items work now. So basically all that happens is that if you get a skill pendant, you can just add it and it'll go towards a certain skill. And one good thing they did with this, you remember how before the regular pendants and then the, prized pendants would give different XP rates?
Mm-hmm.
Now they all give double XP.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different the amount that they give. So it's a really good update in that. And that this doubles the amount of experience you can get by huge amounts for certain skills. So it's really worth it, in my opinion. Other things that can be converted into XP are the Goblin Cower Shield, the Hattie Paws and Skull Boots, the Pumpkin Amulet, the Christmas Pudding Amulet, the Heartbreak Pendant, the Lovestruck Pendant, the Mad Necklace, the Gofanon Amulet, Penance Horns, regular and master, all stealing creation gear. Look at that.
Stealing. Oh, all right.
So
okay.
This means that you can just do stealing creation outright and then put all of the extra smithing or construction XP from your hammers and whatnot into that skill, and off you go. It's really, really amazing.
Cool.
And also a Squeal Fortune recharge gems.
Oh, yeah. I got plenty of those. I'm not... Those for a while.
Yeah, so you can just
I have 125 small recharge gems in my bank.
So you could put these on one skill, and you could get XP probably up to a couple hundred thousand.
Roughly each one gives around rough estimate around 10k each. So I got about what 10 necklaces? No, I got 12 necklaces, about 120. And to give it like around an extra 10k, a little bit higher.
Okay.
Well, I'm lowballing it, but that's kind of a general idea so far.
Yeah, I thought they were around 6k, but we'll have to double check that.
Well, my small ones, I was getting 11k for one of my skills.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Oop, sorry. Okay.
This is excellent, and also items give permanent boosts now while being worn. So this is the artisan's outfit, botanist outfit, blacksmith's outfit, the first age outfit, the sous chef's. So all these things give 1% now rather than wearing out. So these are permanent bonus XP items.
So basically I just use it on them and they'll be stuck with my character forever.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yes. Thank you, Jack.
So, if you have the full artisan set, you can get a constant 5% plus Herblore XP boost.
And, I don't think I do.
and see, this is the thing. Comparing this to the Lumberjack, I think people who spent hours and hours getting Lumberjack are getting kind of shortchanged here.
So they're not okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. The Lumberjacks are not okay, even with this update. And by the way, just a bit of a side note, the selling line for this week's update was, once you chop, you can't stop.
What? Chop what?
The trees. You know, Pringles?
Uh-huh.
Once you pop, you can't stop.
I haven't heard that slogan in years.
Yeah, I mean, I think Pringles are gross, but whatever.
How could you hate chips?
They just don't taste right.
They're potatoes with salt, man.
They don't taste right. They're like, I don't know. No,
that doesn't mean you've been eating the wrong ones.
Maybe, but still, they taste pretty bad here.
Could be the Canadian air.
Could be. Anyways, shall we move on from that to the tweaks and fixes this week?
Well, just some, let's see, some other minor little news. Actually, hold on, let me double check something. Oh, okay, we'll talk about that later. Okay, move on.
All right. So, anything in the release notes that jumped out at you?
Well, they did some fixes with that quest, but I don't know if that's a fix that you were warning me about.
No, it's not. No.
So what's the bug that you told me not to do the quest until they finally fixed
it? It was just very laggy on my computer, and I don't see any fixes in the notes this week for it. So that's kind of unfortunate. The only thing it fixed was players can no longer use more than one explosive gear per cannon in that quest, which is kind of weird when you think about it. Because if you were to use more than one gear, you would not have enough left to complete the other cannons. So you would not be able to complete the quest at that point. So it's probably good it's been fixed. Let's see, what else is in there? There's an actual HTML5 fix mentioned for the Swan Song cutscene.
And signs of Porter now send gems gained from mining ore straight into the bank, which is good.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Because those gems would always come secondary, right?
Well, if you were to do mass mining, you should be opening a gem bag.
That's true. All right, there's two other things here that really are kind of odd and would have liked to have happened beforehand. First off, the Battle of Lumbridge reward shops now offer discounts when purchasing rewards.
Okay.
You know, I wish I would have held on to my points.
What? Which ones?
Well, all the points I accumulated in the Battle of Lumbridge. Because, you know, they're on sale now, so I feel like I could have saved some points if I knew this was coming. It's just kind of annoying. That's all.
Okay.
Also, there was a issue with the offhand dragon throwing axes not being worth the same as their main hand counterparts, so they can now be sold to a shop.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, that's pretty much it, I think. All right. So let's move on.
Okay. Next up, we have the developer's blog of the Prestige. that does not sound good.
Well, I mean, this is another controversial update for people. Because basically what the Prestige system is it's unfortunately named the same thing as Prestige in Call of Duty. Which, I mean, a better name could have been chosen. Really, it could have been. I know I suggested a long time ago I would like a Prestige mode for certain things in-game, because, quite frankly, I want to be able to do things off again and show off that I have a true dedication to these sorts of things. I didn't intend for it to actually be called Prestige, but I guess that's what it's going to be called. That's one problem with it. Another problem that people seem to be having with it is that there are people who either A, don't want to do the work, again, and don't want to give up high scores positions to keep a rank. And the second thing is the ranking as to how the high scores table is going to look. So basically what happens is that once you get level 99 in a skill, you can reset it using the Prestige option, and then you'll restart all the way from level 1 again. So basically it means you get 99, you go into Prestige 1 again, and so forth. Meaning you can do it 4 times, assuming they're not going to cap the 200 million experience ranking. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes. Because in theory, if they didn't cap the 200 mil XP ranking, you could only do it, I think, what was it, 4 or 5 times, if I remember correctly? But chances are they'll just reset the 200 million XP and keep it at 200 mil per prestige. So that's one thing, another thing people are worried about. The second thing is the way that prestige is going to be displayed in the high scores. So let's say you have 14 million experience in a certain skill. Let's say, how much fishing XP do you have?
Oh, I haven't done fishing in a while. I got 20 mil.
Okay, so you have 20 million fishing XP. Now, if you have a counterpart, someone who also has 20 million fishing XP, and they reset your prestige, or their prestige rather, they'll have a higher rank than you, even though they're level 1 in their second prestige.
Okay.
With less experience.
Okay.
So how does that feel? That someone who is level 1 in a higher prestige is going to be ranked higher than you, even though you have more experience in your lower level prestige.
You know what? I think those people who treat the high score like that, they're just glory hogs. I think most people who want... I think those who want to use this system are those like, I've already maxed out everything. I want to try and do it again and see what happens. I mean, more than one, Shane, you've mentioned that you would love to be able to get 99 farming again.
Yep.
So, you know, I say it's like, you know, hey, you've done everything already. Well, here's a chance for you to do it again if you really wanted to. Question is, do you really want to?
Yeah.
But then again, it's more of a like a temporary thing, not a you know, it stays like that forever until you level all the back up again.
Exactly.
That's why they have that place where you can reset.
Because it says that you're not trapped at a low level. So that if a new quest comes out, for example, and you wanted to, for example, make an overload potion and you reset your herblore, you can turn the prestige off and revert to your previous skill level of 99.
And it's so, also... Oh, sorry.
That,
go ahead.
That kind of fixes it, in my opinion, I think.
And, you know, this is one of those things that's like, those who are already number one in RS and, you know, top 10 players, they have, like, what, a couple billion points of experience in their thing? Yep. They may, you know, if they want to make sure that I can do it again, let them have it. It's all good and fun.
Yeah, and just as an example here, let's take a look at a common skill. Let's just look at cooking and see how many pages we have of people with 200 million XP. I've already got 2, 4, 5. Oh yeah, lots of people with 200 million cooking. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, so 10 pages right now of people with 200 million cooking experience. Now, I mean, these people rightfully deserve it. They maxed out the skill, and they're going to be able to revert to their previous levels if they want to when they do that. And that's what I think in this thing that really legitimizes this, is that if you want to go back to what you had before, you can do that. But the thing is, the way this is primarily going to be an update that determines how things look on the high scores. So, for example, the people who want to go further and have the motivation to go further past their 200 million XP are going to go for it. There are people in this list of people who have 200 million cooking experience who would really, really want to do something like this again and keep pushing on and compete with these people.
What I would like to do is see who the first person to get a 1 billion XP altogether. Woo!
I.e. Prestige 5, right?
I don't know. All just altogether. Who knows? I don't know. But, you know, there should be a little pool thing going on, so whoever gets it, you know, gets nice pot of cash.
Yeah, and I mean, they mentioned there's going to be things too, like emotes and titles for doing this. So you're not going to go unrewarded. And as much as people don't like their high score positions being given up, and people who are on a high score table that is relatively stagnant, who don't like fighting for a rank like that, basically, it's going to turn out into a way to encourage people who are at 99 so that they keep going. So that's why I have no problem with this, and I think it's a good thing, because I would love to get 99 farming again. In fact, that's the first thing I'm going to do when this comes out. 99 it's farming just... and 99 herblore, I could reset them both and do them at the same time.
You know what, Shane? This update is a way for people to play old school RS without having to go into old school RS.
Exactly, because I said that the number one thing about the old school servers that was convincing to me was that I could get 99 farming again. But the thing is, I much prefer the technology that we have today compared to what we had back in 07. So this is just such a no-brainer option for me. Anyways, okay, this is just a dev blog about it. It's not out yet. This is not its final form. So remember, people, provide constructive criticism to Jagex on this. I was on the Forbes.
Her prices are going to skyrocket.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. It's good for the economy. I was on the forums yesterday looking at the official post for this. And, I mean, I went through a huge amount of pages of replies. And of these replies, I must have went through upwards of 20 pages of replies. And in these 20 pages, there's only 3 or 5 people who actually substantiated why they thought this was a bad idea. Everybody else was just saying, it's a bad idea, it's a bad idea, it's a bad idea, bad idea, Call of Duty Escape, etc. There were no real reasons provided. So if you have a problem with this, head on over to their forum topic, post about it there, be constructive, because if you're not constructive, we can't get a better product in the end, and that's kind of what happened with Evolution of Combat. And by the way, there are currently 624 people in-game with 200 million cooking experience, or 25 pages of the high scores.
I'm not even close to 200 million XP in cooking. I'm not even close to 30 million. I'm just a chef.
All right. So next up, the Golden Joystick Awards. You can vote for RuneScape if you want. They're up for Best Online Game of the Year. And it turns out that if you vote for the Golden Joystick Awards this year, you get two games. Civ 5. Only one?
Yeah, I posted this on the forum. When I saw this, I just remembered it. But right now, that site is having issues because basically the internet crashed it. But as of right now, the idea is that you register and vote, and you have a choice between Civ 5 or Mafia 2. It's one or the other. Unless you make another account and do all that kind of thing. But meh.
Civ 5 is a fun game.
I tried Civ 4. I just couldn't get into it as much. I guess playing Rome Total War a little too much kind of, I don't know, made it not as good for me.
All right. So basically, if you think Jagex has done a good job this year and you want to vote for them in the Golden Joysticks, you can do that and come away with a free game.
Actually, I want, you know, the update thing with the bonus update thing?
No.
Earlier on, we were talking about how you can use pendants and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It works with the clan rings, too, which is good.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. I just tried. I'm at my Citadel, so I went and tested it out. I'm like, oh, I can get it. Yes, I can actually stock stuff up. But I kept my. I don't have the full set of botanists, so I have to wear those for a while.
All right. Moving on from that, the Ambassador outfit is available in the Solomon's General Store. We haven't talked about one of these in quite a while. I personally am not fond of this look. I guess maybe the Ceridoman one looks okay. I don't know.
I have mixed feelings about the Ceridoman one. I think the Zamorakian one looks a little more bloodthirsty.
Yep.
But I kind of like how Shane.
What?
They're not commies. God dang it.
I said con.
Oh, I swear, I heard commies. Anyway, I kind of like the Ceridoman outfit, but the headpiece just doesn't fit. So the one on the left with the pointy headpiece, it really looks like those the alien beings from Assassin's Creed. And if you went with the one on the right side, it makes it look like you're just covering your entire head. But I think it looks quite nice. I don't know. I just want to mix some stuff up with it.
All right. And also, there's the BTS video for the quest, a murder mystery type quest, Missing Presumed Death, focusing on death and the Sixth Age. And, of course, death is the Grim Reaper. So,
And have a chance of getting nine level 90 prayer armor. I mean, prayer armor, range armor.
Huh?
Yeah. Is that the quest where you get possibility of getting range armor?
No.
Oh, it's not? Oops.
No, that's not coming out with the quest.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
That'll probably be the week after. Anyways, we look forward to that and another quest. All right, let's move on to questions.
Okay.
All right, first one's an audio question from 101 Duck 1.
Hello there, Shane and Trekkie. 101.1 here with just a quick question for you this week. When you play RuneScape, do you see your player character as a separate personality that you control, or just a reflection of yourself? Additionally, why would you say you feel this way? Personally, I see my character as sort of a second form of myself, yet it seems that most players don't share that attachment. That's all for the week, so thanks for the show.
I sort of do. Not in an overly direct sense, but there are certain aspects of it that I run the same way. Like, for example, the farming and herb lore skills. That's the kind of those are kind of sciencey type skills, I guess, that I would find interesting in the real world. So that's kind of why I follow them in game. And but with regards to combat and whatnot, and especially agility, you know, I wouldn't say those relate to me that well, because I'm not a Street Fighter type person with 99 agility as my character thinks he is. So, yes and no. And but I guess with the way I act when it comes to quests, especially how I executed the four people in last week's quest, that is kind of, I guess, how I would behave in real life.
Not me. You know, I don't, it's not an extension of my arm or anything. It's just my character. I shape it in a way how I would like him to be, but I'm, you know, it is, unlike Uncle Dano, it is not an extension of my hand. Cause one thing is, each of people don't look good with a beard. Very few people can actually pull the beard look off as an Asian. And it's just not me.
Oh, Kim. You know, I always asked you about that, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Only, like, you know, you realize that no Asian guy, everyone, any guy that has facial hair is usually a goatee or the long beard.
Yes.
Very few people can actually having a mustache. And I only know of like a good two or three movie stars that can pull off a mustache as an Asian.
All right, so there's that aspect. What about the aspect of how you work in game and the values of your character compared to yours?
It's just my character.
Okay.
I mean,
I try to have the same values as my character, or rather, I try and give my character the same values as me, but that sort of happens in quests and whatnot, and I mean, it's based on what I would like to do. It's not exactly probably what I would do in game, so.
Well, I don't think we would go around killing people for a black cape.
Yeah, that's true, but it is a completely different time period. We got to remember that.
Yeah. I still remember when I tried to bake a, what you call it?
Highwayman?
I tried to beg a highwayman to stop hitting me when I was like level 3. Killed him and got the cape. Okay. Good day.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that covers that question. Thank you, 101 Duck 1.
Hello, Shane and Temple Tricky. Muromska here. With Divination out for a while now, do you think those resource pools are a bit OP? Since the herb prices are going down in general, might be a good thing for herbalist. Or do you think it's reasonable since the herb lore skills have been out for a while? I think we can all agree when we play RuneScape, dual screen is to go, but one thing that surprised me is my mother gung-ho's around with two tablets, a Samsung Galaxy 3 and an iPad 3, of course. Do you think that's a bit over the top? And what's the go with people not actually listening to the music anymore? It seems that the music stations around here seem to be raving about Miley Cyrus's on and off field antics and
what
happens in the video clip. You know, people don't actually listen to the music. Unlike that Canadian band called Nickelback by Pedalbop Blind. I love you, and every Levine's got something. Anyway, I'll talk to you next time. Foreman George, grill or be grilled.
It near the end, it sounds like Marmumska had to go to cleaning station.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. All right, so Herb Price is due to divination. What do you think?
Your area of expertise.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, I'm just looking at the graph for Toad Flax right now because that's one of the most popular ones, or rather was, for training potions and whatnot, or making potions to train. Before Divination came out, the price of these was around $3,900, then it took a really, really sharp drop down to $3,400. And the thing is, then it went back up, and then up, down, up, down, up, down. So there's been a huge, huge fluctuation in these herb prices. Now, I don't think that we can blame the divination divine locations for this, because there's just not enough of them coming into the game for that. Yeah, it put the prices down on aggregate quite a bit when they first came out, but they've kind of stabilized now. I don't think they're going down any further. Like, for example, take a look at Dwarfweed. Started at around 9,700 and then went all the way down to 8,300. That's a 1,400 GP drop in about less than 10 days. So it's something that probably did have an impact on it back in August. But with regards to the continued volatility in this market, how all the herbs seem to be going up and down, up and down, I don't think that's to do with divination. Unless there's a specific reason why people are redeeming these more often rather than not. So, I don't know.
Divine pools really do pay for themselves.
Yeah, they do.
Enough people around you.
Especially the hunting ones. Those ones are really, really good for hunting.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah, I mean, they're a very, very good way of training hunter if you're just doing some divination on the side. And you can only create one a day, but you can put... I mean, but you can harvest from a whole variety of them. So it really doesn't matter when it comes to that.
Okay.
But no, I don't think it's a major issue. I would like to know what's causing the volatility. At this point in the show, I don't have enough time to look further into it as to what could be causing it. But it's very weird that it said volatile on such a short time span, even if you look at some of the herbs over the past 30 days, for example. Like Dwarfweed's a really good example here.
It crashed?
Well, no. Look at the price for Dwarfweed. A month ago, it was $8,500. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, it was $9,100. Now, today, we're back down to $8,700. So it's gone up, gone down, gone up, went down a bit more. It's truly a roller coaster for some reason. I'm not sure why. Anyways, two tablets... Are two tablets better than one?
You know what? It's his mother. Marmoska, ask mommy. And see whether mommy will slap you with the spaghetti spoon or tell you the truth.
What?
Ask mother.
But what is a spaghetti spoon? I have to deal with it.
Clearly, you were smacked as a child.
No, I was not.
Uh-huh. There you go. Glad you didn't have a bamboo stick around.
Okay, that is obviously how different cultures do it, right? I'll take that as a yes.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah. Okay. I do think two tablets is a bit overkill. I mean, they're the same form factor. They're supposed to do the same thing. You should definitely ask her why she has both. You can accomplish both jobs relatively the same way, I think. And most apps on tablets nowadays are supported by iOS and Android evenly. So even if the apps aren't the same, there should be a way to get parity between the two devices to do the same thing. That might be worth looking into for her because, you know, I'm sure she carries a cell phone too. So that's three devices right there. And, I mean, that's just a lot to carry around to get work done. So I'd say ask her, and I do think it's a little too much.
No comment.
Next one.
Next one is no one listens to music anymore. We just nitpick at everything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably the best person to ask about this because if you look at everything that's been going on recently, it's entirely apparent what is going on with that industry. And let's just say it's not what it used to be even 5 years ago, in my opinion. Granted, I don't listen to music. But what these music singers are doing is it's just totally disgusting the way they're creating these music videos and attempting to sell their songs nowadays. They really should be condemned for that. But, I mean, the world is the way it is, and people aren't going to change their mind based on proper morals and whatnot. And, I mean, that's the thing these days. I would like to know out there if there are any major musical performers in the top 40 these days, or even in more of a niche type market, who actually do care about morals and do care about what their listeners think of them and the message they're sending to the world with what they do, not only what they do but also in what they say in their songs.
Well, I gotta say one little thing though. There was a time, you know, many couple years back that I was actually defending Miley Cyrus. How she, you know, she was supposed to be the Disney star princess, and if she, anything she did was considered, oh, think of the children. And it's like, she's growing up. Disney doesn't own her body. And people were getting angry that she was in an ad that showed some of her back, her nude back. And I was like, that's not showing anything. It's just her back.
You know, yeah, it's the thing, but somebody who is always in people's houses with younger children, and say you had a child who was a couple years ago when she was still normal, watching her TV shows, that child was, say, 9 or 10, and now the child, say, 13 or 14, and the child sees this nowadays. What kind of messages is that sending to that child? So I can see where people did have a problem with what you mentioned, and I would have a problem with what you mentioned as well.
Well, no, the thing is, you know, well, I'm gonna keep it really relatively short. Like, you know, I defended her when she was started to be not the non Disney princess thing that was happening. Because, you know, hey, she was done with Disney. She wanted to explore herself and be her own person, and then everything she did was scrutinized to hell. It was just,
yep.
And you know that you don't do that to people, and for those, they just want to complain and make her life a living hell. And I think, well, that probably may have an effect on her because she kind of went on the little extreme.
Well, the thing is, public figures like that do have a moral obligation to stand up to things like that. And prevent bad things like that from happening. So, I mean, it really is something that should be taken more care of these days in Hollywood and whatnot.
Okay.
All right. You can read the next one.
Okay. This question is from Easton5123. question for you both. Do you think that violent video games make violent kids? Do you think that it can influence or change someone's thoughts on the world and possibly make them crazy? Shane, you go first. No?
You know, I think it's a combination of both. You can't entirely blame the video game and you can't entirely not blame it. There's a chance that it will have a partial side effect to it. Not only do we need to worry about that, but we also need to worry about the messages, once again, that these games are sending. So I'm not saying that entirely they can make violent kids, but they could probably have some sort of influence, as our questioner suggests. And no, it probably wouldn't make someone crazy.
Nah, usually those who go crazy with violent video games are usually influenced by other gamers like, I dare you, I dare you, you won't do it, yeah. But I actually did a paper on this many moons ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I was trying to, you know, do a small paper on do violent video games act, or video games in general, cause more aggressive behavior, and you know the results were quite astounding. They actually do make kids more aggressive. I mean, remember, we're all trying to win, so you gotta be a little bit everyone's a little bit aggressive. I mean, and I mean, you know, you can play Mario, you're like,
let's quote Worf, what is the point in playing if not to keep score?
But you know, the thing is that the difference between someone becoming a violent person versus someone who just plays violent video games just for, you know, it's those who play violent video games and don't go the whole psychobabble route, they play it for entertainment. I mean, you know, if that's the same thing, if you want to go the same way, if I play tons of soccer games, I should be a FIFA World Champion. And so, and you know, the whole point of you know, sort of my research is that while video games in general do create more aggressive behaviors in the gamer, again, it's up to you as a human being to have the self-control to realize that you can't go around and trying to run people over because you play it in a video game. And quite honestly, there's also a reason why many video games have an age limit. And if you can't figure out the difference between a video game and real life, I want to lock you in a cell.
And the thing is, these days, video game age limits and the ratings on them are rarely followed.
And you know what? Then maybe you trust your child enough to actually know the difference between right and wrong. And
yeah,
if you trust your child
that
much, that's great.
I mean, if you can give your kid a rated M game when they're 13 or 14, and you trust them, that's fine. But I wouldn't give a 9-year-old a rated M game.
Oh, well, tell you this though, I told my uncle is that, you know, you should watch Batman, you know, the second Batman movie. But I flat out told him, but don't show it to your kids, they will have nightmares.
Yeah, I mean, there's a thing. Like, there is as I said, there is a limit, and once again, it comes down to parenting and choices being made. And if the right choices aren't made, there's nothing you can do about it. Bad things are going to happen. So the parent needs to have the right judgment. And if you're an upcoming parent and you're questioning that, you do need to have the right judgment as well. So anyways, let's move on from that. I think we answered it well enough. All right, next one from Jason, MRC. Will the sudden surge in low-level training with regards to prestige create a high demand for lower-level resources, or will most of those prestiging already have the resources and breathe through the low levels? Now, I included this one because it's on the economy, and we don't know already what kind of impact prestige was going to have, and we talked about that earlier, so that's why I didn't include the first one. But with regards to this one, I know I have quite a few low-level herbs and seeds stocked up. But it wouldn't get me all the way through to the point where I need higher level ones. So I know in my case there would be a need for those in farming and herb lore. But if you look at skills that are like crafting or smithing, for example, some of the older skills, you will need the lower level resources. And look at what's been happening in game recently. Up until last year, there were botters in game who were flooding the market with these kind of resources. So, I mean, granted, some of these resources are still in game as it is. So maybe this is a good idea to take some of those resources out of the game. That's the way I see it. But chances are you will not have the resources, especially at higher levels, because nobody has that amount of liquid funds that they're going to keep enough farming seeds around or enough adamant bars around to go from 73 to 85 smithing. Nobody's going to keep that many around for that. No way. Well, I mean, you really think people have upwards of 60,000 adamant bars just sitting in a bank?
Well, technically, all my ores are in the dwarven ore place by the artisan workshop. Are in the artisan workshop.
How many?
But I don't know. I quit counting.
Well, let me just give you a number here. Currently, if I am level 90 smithing, and I'm going for level 99, and I wanted to do the adamant plate bodies, which you unlock at 88, I would need 24,000 of those. Multiply that by 5 to get how many adamant bars you would need. And that's almost 100,000 adamant bars, just level 90 to 99. So you really got to ask, do people really have this much stuff lying around? I don't think so. So I think it's going to create enough of demand that it won't be a problem.
Let's see. God, low level. The demand's going to skyrocket for a little bit, but not everyone's going to, and not everybody's going to go like, I want to get 99 mining again. I want to get 99 wood cutting again. Well, actually, no, wait, you have to do those. I want to get 90 smithing or crafting again or something.
Yeah, you're only going to get the diehards doing it. But with regards to other skills, like fishing, for example, just take a look at the price right now of, say, a lobster and a shark. Lobsters are down. So if more of those were to come into the market, they'd go down even further. Let's see about shark now, because sharks have been very... they've been fluctuating quite a bit. They're back up to 1,000 plus. But if we go back to the last year, we can see that they were all the way down at about 269. So, I mean, sharks could end up going down a bit. I think it'll be good for the economy and the secondary and tertiary skills market. But the only bad area we'll see it will be in the primary market, potentially, for things like ores and sharks. For people gathering them, you'll see the prices go down a bit. But then again, that's good for the skillers and the preps in the secondary markets.
Okay, and the second question, Shane.
The second one. How do you think prestige and combat stats will work? Like prestiging either attack or defense, but leaving constitution and strength high. This is interesting. Well, no, you can't really do that anymore, because...
it was a joke.
I know. But, like, let's say you prestige, like he says, attack and defense, and you leave constitution and strength high. So if you do a defense, you will automatically take 99 off your combat level. But if you were to leave your strength level, you would have the high strength, but low defense, and you would have what would work like a peer, but of course you would suffer because you have a low defense level. So, I mean, nowadays if you have low defense, you're handicapping yourself. You can't really make a successful peer anymore. But, I mean, that's what it said in the dev blog, that you're going to be able to reset back to the non-prestiged stat if you're looking to go bossing or something like that. So it won't pose an issue on that front. But I guess if you wanted to try and do combat with this, you could make some very interesting things happen. Like if you wanted to take Jad or the Tormented Beasts out, or maybe even Nex or something like that. Do it with 30 attack or something. That would be amusing. So, that's what I think is going to be happening with that. You have anything on that?
No, not really. I think if you were to do that, I would just change strength, because then you can carry the best weapon and just smack it like crazy.
Yeah. And then finally, will you prestige all your max stats or only your favorites? What do you think?
I got nothing.
Okay, so you're not going to prestige any of them?
Nope.
All right. I'm only going to go for my favorites. So that'll be Herblore and Farming to begin with. Because the story goes is that back in the olden days, I got 99 Farming and then 99 Herblore. Both of those were incredibly fun to get, and I would love to do that again, given the modern mechanics that we have. And just because those are my two favorite skills in the game, those two need to be done first. That's probably really odd looking too. I mean, there's no way to remove a skill cape permanently with this prestige thing, I don't think, so that's kind of unfortunate. If I could do that, I would prestige attack and fletching, because I didn't intend to get those 99s. They just kind of crept up on me. So, anyways, that's what I'll be doing. Let's hear what everybody else is doing or wants to be doing when this comes out. So, let us know in the show discussion on the forums, rsbmb.com/forums, or you can send us in a question next week pertaining to maybe how you would train one of these skills when Prestige Mode actually comes out. And if you want to do that, you can send in audio questions like 101 Duck and Maremska did, just to email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave us a voicemail on Skype. Just send it to the username rsbnbupdate. Or you can leave us a voicemail by phone on Google Voice. The number for that is 571-572-2632. All right, that's all for questions this week. Let's move on to tech news. All right, so first up, tweets are now being used to gauge TV audiences. So, basically, you know how if you watch any modern TV show, you'll see that they put a hashtag at the bottom of it, say, pertaining to look up, X Factor or Big Bang Theory, something like that. Twitter is using these to provide data to Nielsen, who does the ranking of the TV systems. So something interesting was actually found about this, believe it or not. You want to take a guess at what that is?
Twitter has a direct correlation with TV popularity.
Unfortunately, it does not. Or fortunately, depending on how you look at things. But the shows that were in the top 10 of Nielsen's were not in the top 10 of Twitter audiences. The top 10 in Nielsen's audiences was NBC Sunday Night Football, rather, The Big Bang Theory, NCIS, Big Bang Theory Special, NCIS Los Angeles, The Crazy Ones, Sunday NFL Night Pre-Kick, The Voice on Monday, then Tuesday, and Monday Night Football. So those were the top 10 on the actual TV. Now, with regard to Twitter unique audiences, there were only two that got captured in this. They were, of course, The Voice, which were very, very far down the list of the actual Nielsen audiences. The top Twitter audience was Breaking Bad, followed by The Monday Voice, then Jimmy Kimmel Live, Dancing with the Stars, SEC Stoned, Grey's Anatomy, then The Tuesday Voice, Glee, How I Met Your Mother, and The X Factor. So there is no correlation between TV and social media in terms of viewership. But what it can mean is that those who do tweet on these different specific shows can be targeted differently, pertaining to the ads on Twitter and the ads on TV. So given this information, it shows an interesting demographic split about how to target the ads on the shows that are not in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, this happens because Twitter users are younger and more often in cities than compared to people who are just not on Twitter. Just that's just a general fact. And at the end of the day, the theory is that if fans are engaged on Twitter, it means the ads are also being paid attention to. So the shows that are engaging on Twitter are better to buy ads for. Interesting story. And that Nielsen ratings probably can be augmented by better ways of doing things. You have anything to say on this?
I don't tweet, so I don't care.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next one then. Fox News Deck. Did you see this?
What, the 55-inch iPad?
Yeah, actually Microsoft tablets in this case.
Windows Surface.
Yeah.
Might have been more of Windows Surface, be more of a table Surface.
Yep, that's right. So essentially what Fox News did is they bought a whole bunch of these huge Microsoft Surface displays. The Microsoft bought the company last year called Perspective Pixel, and effectively it's a 1080p Surface display, and it just runs Windows 8, and it's basically how Fox News is sorting through all of their entries, and they're crowdsourcing it based on Twitter and whatnot to provide alternate sources for where they get their news. They're kind of attempting to trailblaze in a way that other networks haven't. So basically, the people who are tweeting and whatnot do actually have a say in what becomes popular. So it's kind of what the internet tried to do a couple years ago with websites like Dig and Reddit, trying to find the most popular news. But this time an actual cable network is doing it, which could be interesting, I think.
Okay. But wasn't there a parody of this where someone, one of the people in the back was playing Galaga?
Playing what?
Galaga.
What is that?
The shooting. It's like the Space Invader game.
I don't know. I didn't hear that, but
there was a parody on it. It was just a small, quick Photoshop.
Oh, okay. These displays costed $8,000 each. And you know the funny thing about this is? You want to know what the funny thing is? These displays have a screen resolution of 1920 by 1080, but the iPad has a display resolution that's larger and it's only 10 inches, as do other tablets as well. So, I mean, it's not that big of a technological leap. It just looks nice. But the story behind it is actually what they're doing with regards to all the tweets and whatnot that do come in. So, and before anybody says it, this might be a reason to actually look at Fox News if you don't normally look at Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Let's just move on. I got nothing to say on this one anyway.
Okay. All right. Now, what's this last one that you found for us?
It seems some iPhone 5s have been in trouble for getting the blue screen of death.
Oh, you went with that one, not the...
Sorry. Rewind. Valve will be using AMD for their Steam machine in 2014. Rewind. I'm jumping ahead. Okay.
Yeah, so...
So...
Go ahead, tell us
about it. So anyway, Valve have made a quick statement that they have confirmed that AMD graphic hardware will be included in all Steam machines available next year. And that's it.
That's nice. That means that AMD has actually successfully locked up all the next generation consoles because they're doing the Xbox and they're doing the PS4 for graphics, and now they're doing the Steam box. So AMD's got a pretty, pretty convincing market share of these next-gen consoles. And, I mean, AMD does need to find its niche because pretty much everybody nowadays uses Intel on their computers for hardware and whatnot. So it's not surprising that AMD was able to find a place where they can work and deliver hardware and video solutions. So this was kind of expected, but it's nice to see that this is confirmed after all. Because AMD is actually starting to make some pretty nice integrated solutions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm very happy about the Steam box, but good story.
Okay. That's basically
all right. Well, let's move on to the other things then. The Skill of the Month update for October and the Crafting Skill of the Month. We kind of got a one-horse race here kind of going on. Soul Lightning currently in first with about 2.7 million experience gained so far. Second place is Poison Nova with 900,000 XP. And third place is Lord Rickles with 675,000 XP. So at this point, it does look like we have a race going on for second here between three people. It's entirely possible that with 20 days left in the month, that Soul Lightning will stop and somebody will be able to catch him. So, to everybody competing in this skill of the month, keep going. It's not over. We'll look forward to seeing what happens with it.
Okay, then. And, as Shane always say, keep it interesting.
Yep.
All right. And now we have the achievements of the week.
Not a whole bunch of them this week.
Well, technically it's three people, but I'll start off. So we got Fire Magna, who got 99 cooking, 99 fletching, and 99 wood cutting on October 8th. I forgot to put the dates, but I remember him. I was there. Alex,
and we also got Alex 43, 99 dungeoneering, and another Informer writer. Congratulations to him.
Got that on October 5th. And we also have Scream Truth, who got 99 thieving on the 6th. Congrats, you three.
Nice job, everyone. Nice job.
All right. So, Shane, I believe we have supplemental for us.
Yeah, this week when the update came out, I did one of our RSBMB update supplemental segments on the Treevolution update. Because it's been a while since we did one, and this one actually did have some technical details behind it that could be covered successfully. So I did that, and I talked about pretty much what we talked about in the first 10 or 12 minutes of the show in a much more condensed manner, and it's got video on it. So you can find that on the RSBMB YouTubes at youtube.com/RSBMBstaff, and we will be doing more with this in the future. We got a couple of things planned with it, specifically if an update comes out that's controversial, as would have happened with the bonds, we will provide what will be instant opinion coverage on that rather than having to wait till the weekend. So there will be that, and we'll also be canvassing the forums and the friends chat and in-game and looking for people to lend their voice to a short segment. A couple times a month to tell us exactly what they think about the update. So it is a way of bringing you guys into the fold of doing one of these RSBMB update episodes. All right.
Cool.
What's next?
Well, next, You have a pick for us, don't you, Shane?
Yeah, I do. Basically, this is another little iOS application that was actually shown to me by Earth. He's very nitpicky when it comes to sounds, and as am I, of course, with a recording environment. So if I can benchmark the room by bass and find out how noisy the room is, that helps me a great deal in knowing whether or not it's too noisy to do a show or not. So there is an application on iOS. It's basically a monitoring application to tell how noisy your current area is. It tracks it and then tells you what it's close to. Like, for example, right now when I'm chatting, it's fluctuating between the high 60s and low 80s in terms of decibels, and it shows what the max is and what the peak is in the current window of time. And then if you're quiet, it'll show you what the sound environment is. So if I'm quiet, it's right. It says average quiet home. But when I start talking, it turns into average loud singing, which is kind of weird, seeing as I'm not singing, but I guess talking is close to singing. It's overall just a nice way of measuring sound levels, and it's free. It's called Decibel Tenth.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yep, so that's pretty much it. Can be found for free on the App Store. Just search for Decibel 10th, and the link will be in the show notes.
Okay.
So, what have you been up to?
Oh, I was doing divination a good portion of this week, actually. Mind checking myself to 71 divination.
Oh, good.
Did some dungeoneering tasks. Haven't done them all, obviously, just the bits and pieces. Did my Citadel?
Yeah, I've heard that the dungeoneering task set is quite extensive and probably one of the more annoying ones.
Only if you don't like the story stuff. I mean, I don't mind those. It would be nice to actually get completed in some of them.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else interesting?
Nope. Nada.
All right, then. As for me this week, I've just been training thieving still on the Apatol at the Monkey Knife Fighters. Those are really, really good XP. And you can really, really get double XP now, given the fact that you get the same kind of XP from your pendants. So it's a very nice update this week, and it'll make my thieving go a whole lot faster. And aside from that, I just checked out the trees and did supplemental too. So that's pretty much it for me this week. I don't think we have anything else to mention now, do we?
Today? No, I think that's basically it. Enjoy the new quest that's coming out soon, and keep training crafting.
Alrighty then. Well, with that being said, we'll see you guys next week, everyone, and have a good weekend.